I remember when we first started this whole podcast thing, we just came up with the name God Journey. Some people didn't like it. I think it's perfect. This is not about me. This is not my journey. I am a supporting actor in a greater drama that's going on. This is about him.
Thinking outside the box isn't about whether you go to a meeting or not. It's about breaking free of the obligations of religious performance and living in the adventure of a relationship with God as our Father.
Two real guys talking about life, that's a good tagline.
Slinging freedom all over the place and making no apologies, this is The God Journey. Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson, but there's no Brad Cummings in the studio today. Pitching in for Brad today would be...
Sarah Jacobson.
Brad and I got our signals crossed, both coming back from a bit of vacation and Hidley Town right away before we could get a podcast in the can. So we were going to just pass it for this week, but then Sarah and I got talking the other day and thought it'd be fun. A lot of you like to hear from Sarah from time to time, and we don't get enough of a quote-unquote women's perspective on here enough. So, babe, you have to represent all the women in the world today.
I don't think I'm up for that one.
You're not going to do that?
No.
You're just going to talk for yourself?
Yes.
That's probably really smart. Yeah. So we're going to do this, and then I'm not sure whether we'll get more recorded before I leave for Australia or not, since I'm leaving for Australia quickly. I think the plan is we'll get a couple done. And if we don't, then we'll see you sometime in September, the rest of you. But for now, we get to have Sarah today talk about some things and or talk about some things with me, since she doesn't like to be put on the spot and just say, hey, Sarah, why don't you tell us everything about your life?
Yeah, that's not going to work.
No. So I did want to share with you one thing that Sarah doesn't really even know about yet, but we've got two ladies out there who are both listeners to The God Journey, as I understand it. I'm just kind of being filled in on this. I didn't know what was going on, actually. But there's a Shelley from Indiana donating a kidney to Heather from Alaska.
Wow.
And their surgery is actually going to be this coming Tuesday, August 23rd. And I, as I understand this story, and I could get it wrong, we're going to provide a link to a page about this, because part of it in just a great story of one, these sisters, as I understand it, didn't know each other till they kind of met on a forum. And then one found out the other was looking for a kidney and felt impressed to be part of this story, got checked out. And even though she's unrelated, Shelley's unrelated to Heather, the kidneys, the whatever blood work, whatever, is a match. And so
that's amazing.
Isn't that an amazing story? So yeah, they're going to donate that. Insurance is covering a lot of the expenses, I guess, but there's a lot of people, flights and things. And so there is a, if you want to help this happen, there's a donation button on the website that we'll link at the bottom of this podcast on our podcast page, thegodjourney.com. But what an amazing story. Two gals met online, and somehow they had this connection. And so
what a gift.
It is an incredible gift of life, and you can read their blogs, and Heather, just see how grateful, awed, and everything Heather is by this opportunity, and Shelley's wonderful excitement about being part of it as well. So,
wow.
This Tuesday, think about them in prayer, if you would, and should be great. We also got a recent email from Kenya, and I know some of you have been keeping up on this, some of you haven't, but the need in Kenya has just been really over the top this spring and now summer. The it had a big drought in the Horn of Africa. If you've seen it on the news, it's affecting Somalia and Sudan and also the north part of Kenya, where a lot of the folks that we know live. And Michael wrote us this week, who's just got a great heart for the people in his community, and he's just saying, you know what, there are people here that look all day just to find a meal.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to get one meal a day. So if you want to help us with that, there's also a link at the homepage. And if you want to send some money, we're going to send it all over there and see if we can help feed some of these folks. So that's some of the stuff going on around here. So, Sarah, tell us about your summer. Have you had a fun summer?
Yes, I have had a fun summer.
Good.
But it's been very busy.
You've been traveling with me.
All summer.
There's not one trip you missed, not one?
Not one.
Oh, man, I think I might have played around a golf somewhere. You missed that trip.
Well, that's a trip?
It is for me. I don't leave the house often when I'm home.
Well, I don't consider that a trip.
No, we started in May back in Indiana taping the Jesus Lens and went from there to... didn't I make a trip? Maybe I didn't make a trip between those two. Anyway, then you were with me.
We had a little side trip that we did, but it was business related.
Oh, okay. And then, that's right. And then you went to Europe with me.
Yes.
And I wonder if you'd talk about a little bit about one spot of it, because time in Spain and Malaga on a Sunday morning, people asked about your story a bit, and you got a chance to share it. And the people were just, particularly the women, I think women overseas are particularly embrace your story of feeling like a nobody and God transforming. I don't know if we want to tell that whole story here, but tell me about that time sharing with those people. What did that feel like to you?
It was, it's always kind of different overseas because cultures, women and cultures are different. And so never sure how people, how women will relate, and or even men. But it was a very special time. It was a unique time because we were just sitting under fig trees. Was it fig?
It was a fig tree.
Yeah, they kept dropping figs, kept dropping and got stains, and then people had to keep moving because they were getting dropped by juice from the figs. But it was just a real special time, and I kind of shared some general things, and then they kept asking more specific questions, and so it was a sweet time. I hope it was encouraging to some people. We got into some just really practical things. I mean, it's one thing to share some general type of things, but it's when you get into the practical things that it that sometimes I think women can be relate to, because they like to hear, they can relate when they hear certain things, the specifics and details, and they can, at least that's, some women can do that.
Yeah, and it relates very well across cultures. I think we found that a number of places where you've talked through your story of being, if we could summarize it quickly, and if you want to hear the details, Sarah actually and I did a marriage seminar about a year and a half ago back in Pennsylvania and recorded some of that dialogue about Sarah's story. We'll provide that link at the bottom of this podcast. So if you want to hear her story, you can go hear it in more detail there, and there's other places where we've shared it. But basically it was moving from someone who felt like he didn't have anything to offer, kind of felt like, you know, you wouldn't have wisdom about things, and you just kind of went along with everybody else's expectations about you. Is that fair?
No value, no really worth, or that my opinions was worth anything. It was more that I just catered to whatever anybody else wanted to do.
And that was starting out in your family, parents?
From a young age.
Transferred to marriage, transferred to, quote-unquote, being a pastor's wife.
Yeah, and I never knew anything different.
Yeah, and until about, oh gosh, maybe 15, 18 years ago, when God kind of took you for a bit of a transformation.
Yeah.
And you discovered, what would be the main thing, or one of the main things?
The main thing was, because I didn't really know, or I would say I didn't know who I was in a whole transformation. There was a turning around to where, bottom line, I was realized that I'm a daughter of Heavenly Loving Father first, and then that I am a mother, a grandmother, and a wife. I'm all those, but that's not my value. My worth is not in that. My being is totally related and coming from being loved by Heavenly Father. That I'm a daughter and precious, and I have, and I'm special to Him, and there's a reason for me. And so, it was mainly that my worth is in being a daughter of Heavenly Father, and then carrying over to where I am a wife, mother, and grandmother now, and that those are two separate issues. And so where I'm a daughter, I have my worth in being living in that.
And how has that changed the way you live?
Change. In that respect, I know now from before people would say what I was like, what I meant to them and what they saw in me. Now I know that for myself, what I, where some of my gifts, I mean, and all of this is, I mean, changing. We change through life, but my worth is in that. And then what has changed is I have worth inside of myself. I know for myself, I have value, and it doesn't really change per se what I do and in my daily, activities.
Would you say you're more honest now than you were before?
I try to be. It's still not an easy thing always, but I do try to be. But what's different is that I have value, and my opinions do matter, and that I'm part of a process in life with those relationships that I have, that I'm connected with. I mean,
well, even in our marriage, wouldn't you say that you're much more honest and very free to have opinions about things that you might have hid in the past?
Oh yeah, I have opinions now. I never had opinions before,
yeah.
And now I have opinions. I know that I'm part of a relationship. Before it wasn't, and that there's part of me and feelings that I want to. That are involved in the relationship. And before, I just like, you know, it was mainly what others wanted to do.
Yeah, at some point you said you were even, because we were always pretty committed. I was, I think, early in marriage, that the two become one flesh, as Paul says in Ephesians 5. So I was wanting us to have unity together. And I, for 20 years, I kind of thought we did because we'd talk about stuff and you just seemed to always feel the same way about things that I did.
Yep.
Which I thought was amazing. We even joked about, you know, we never have a fight in this marriage because there's only one of us that's willing to fight. And we'd even joke about stuff like that.
But I'm still not a fighter. I mean, I'm more not a big fighter, but go ahead.
No, I would never say you're a fighter, even now. But you're a lot more honest, and mm-hmm. you're a lot more willing to stand your ground and say, I'm seeing something here, and I want, you know, us to process it.
Yep.
I guess what I want to talk about this, because... one of the things I say often, and I think it's true, as much as religion oppresses us all, and I think it does, it really oppresses women even more so.
Absolutely.
Maybe 100 times more. And I guess when you talk about, you know, the first 20 years of our marriage where you're just quietly going along, trying to guess what my desires or opinion might be, and then molding to that, there's a part of religion that really says to women, that's the ideal. That's what you, quote unquote, should do.
Well, I think a large part of that, and I could be wrong, but it seems to come back to the whole submission and women, wives submitting to their husbands. And it's, to me, it's not just submission. It's a suppressing of, you know, your life and
that's a good word. It's not submission. It's really suppression, the way that works out most times.
Yeah, it's because submission, I mean, I'm not a good word theology type of person, but suppression, it really pushes down. I mean, I think men, and I don't like to categorize all men like this, but I think the tendency is, you know, you don't agree, so I'm the man, and you got to do what I want to do. And sometimes also because the women are the ones who care for the needs of the family and in the household with the kids and all that, you know, it's just like, it's your job. You have to do this. And so, like I said, it's not all men and women because, I mean, the every marriage is different. But I think
feel that? This is a scary question. Lawyers say never ask a question in court you already don't know the answer to, so I have no idea how you can answer this. But do you feel like that shut up, go along thing came from me, or do you think it just came from the culture of the religion you were caught up in?
Was that before or after I changed?
Before.
I don't know if I would say, because I didn't know anything different. I mean, all my life I lived to others, because
Is that partly attached to your womanhood, because you were a woman?
I don't know if it was attached for me to the womanhood. It might be for some. I didn't know any different. And my tendency my whole life was to, everybody was important and I wasn't important. And I mean, I don't, and so.
Yeah, but I get the email a lot from women on this journey who do feel like second class citizens, that God's more male than not. And that women are less able to project his image in the world than men are. And now see where a religion has undergirded that a whole lot. Does that play into your feelings at all through this time? Did you feel like a second-class citizen? I guess that's what I want to ask.
At times, yes.
Because you were a woman, or just because you didn't, because of the insecurity or the didn't think you had a valuable thing to add, or where did that come from? Do you know?
I don't know. It might be more from the women. I mean, from being a wife sometimes, I think, is more like a servant in the family, and the husband is the, you know, provider. And so in that, that does create it's really subtle. It's just so subtle that to even say that or mention it, it just sounds, that's not good, or that's not right. And so you don't pursue that. But there is a servant mentality, and even for people who serve and who are servants and have a serving heart, the institutions, man, they need serving people, and they latch onto those people, and it's really, can become like that too. I mean, it's not just women, but I think it's so subtle, so suppressing that you really not aware that it is going on.
And the traditions we were part of, and I think even when we were pastoring, the environments in which the pastoring happened, there really was a sense that the value of the man was to listen to God and teach and be up front and do those kinds of things. And the ideal for women were to be quieter in the background and serving your head off, you know, cooking meals and
yep.
and doing childcare. And I even think of some women we burned out, and we thought of them as, gosh, here's the gal
yeah.
we love and want to point to, because whenever there's a need, she's volunteering and being there.
But they get overused.
She got way overused and almost
yeah.
lost her. I'll never forget the day she sat in my office after I was out of pastoring, and she had had a near nervous breakdown, and she sat in my office and was telling me this whole thing of just, she had this wonderful relationship with God as a little girl, and as she got older, she felt like she lost it. And she felt like she had to do all this work for the church to try and earn it back, but then realized it wasn't working and burned herself out. And I remember looking across, she pointed her finger at me and said, you are my pastor, and you didn't stop me.
Yeah.
And I remember when she said it, I thought, no, you were too valuable. How could we stop you? We wanted more women like you, because this was filling holes for us that needed to be filled. And yet I felt you're absolutely right. What a horrible construct that women have, that the religion has provided for women, to feel like you're valued by your quiet, submissive service, not necessarily because you're a person with insight and wisdom and inherent value, just as you are among the family.
And for, you know, to use those as, you know, the two people or even me, you know, you look at this person and look how well they do that, and then you need to be like that person, or why can't you be like that person? And then the guilt that comes from them, because I'm not as good as that person, and that's not, you know, we are all made different.
Yeah, not as good, gifts. Maybe not gifted in the same way. Is that probably a better way to say it? But it felt like not as good, maybe.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah.
It's not as good. I don't do that as well as that person, and I don't have, I mean, and so there's so much comparison. But I think, I mean, the way that the, you know, marriages used to be, I mean, the perception of women, and even now in today's world, it's sad, but you can see where there is so much focus put on what women look like and how they dress, and so that's still an object of looking to be used and to get something from, and so. It just, women have come very far away in being able to be a person and not to be put in, you know, I hate the second class, but I mean, there is a serving, but in serving, there is a sense in that if you live in that and you get your worth from that, it still is getting a place where you are second class, or you're underneath a person. And I think a husband so much can talk down or look down at their wives.
And express disappointment when they don't conform to what they want. And
or if, you know, the husband's the one working and then the wife is staying home, I mean, her job is no less important than his. But then he can come and say, well, it's my money. I'm the one that's doing the working. Because I would just say, you know, and I know this, saying that being a housewife, well, I'm just at home with the kids. Well, no. I mean, that is, when I hear that, it's just like, ooh, no, you're not just at home. Those are precious gifts, you're at home. I, you know, I like to say now, what fills your day? What, you know, our days are all different. We are no one more important than another. What we do is important, and for women who stay home, and for the years I was in, working in the school system, there's so many women in there who have to work in order to support and maintain, you know, living.
Particularly here in California.
Yeah, and so, expensive. I mean, for them, they would love and would cherish the time to be able to be at home and be a stay-at-home mom. But then you have some, you know, some people, I can fill my day. For me, I'm going to have more things in my life that I would want to do than I will ever have time to do. So I have lots of things I want to do. Some women are more social people, more busier, don't like to be as much at home. I mean, but that's them. Yeah. There's no right or wrong in all that. We're just different.
I think if people knew you, and that, to me, this is one of the amazing things. I've seen tremendous change. I joke about the pre-94 Sarah and the post-98 Sarah and how much got changed in that season of time in your life. But I think if people were in our home and spent time with our kids and grandkids with you, they would see that you still have a real servant's heart. Even through that transition thing, you really serve your kids, serve your grandkids, serve me in incredible ways. But it's from a really different place.
Because I know that's about me. Before I did it because that's everybody else. I mean, that's what I did. I didn't know any different. I was doing it to make everybody happy. And I didn't think that in myself. I mean, wasn't doing that. I didn't know. I didn't have any worth or felt I was important in any way. I mean, I just did it because I could do it and I did it well. And that's, everybody else was more important. But I do it now because I know, I mean, that's me. And that was a process of going through and learning. And so,
it's things you're freely choosing to do, not things you feel like other people have put on you with their expectations.
Yeah,
and devalued. I heard this last week on the radio, and I'm regretfully, it wasn't in a place to write down who was saying it. Thought I would remember. I don't. I was able to remember what they said that was eye-opening to me. Because this was a conversation with a mediator for marriage counseling. And he said, successful marriages don't resolve 67% of their conflicts. I went, what? I think part of our being of one mind that I had in my heart through most of our married life was we needed to agree on things. We need to, if we had disagreement or differences of opinions about things, somehow our marriage is served by being of one mind, one flesh, one heart, so that every conflict needed to work out to some resolution. So when I heard this, I went, wow. What he was saying was, I know great marriages that don't resolve 67%, I don't know where he gets that term, of the conflicts. And what he's saying is they have simply learned to live in tension to those differences. And they've learned to treat each other with respect and grace and fairness in dealing with them. I think that was an amazing statement.
Yeah.
Because I think that's much more probably where we're landing in this journey. I would say now we're 36 years into this marriage.
Yep.
On our way. And I would say, you know, you think, gosh, we're two kids madly in love. We graduated college together. We had the whole world opening up before us, and we were going to be loving partners together. But look back, and really, two very selfish people got married. And that selfishness expressed itself in very different ways. For me, it was, I'm pretty bold, saying what I want, going after it, go for it. You are much more in the sense of feeling insecure and not knowing who you were. You're that selfishness, and I know it's a weird word to put around it because you were being selfless in the process, but it was still all coming from this unwhole space inside of you.
Yeah?
And to hear that, man, the more important thing in a marriage is not that you agree on everything. It's that you treat each other with respect and grace and fairness as you deal with the things you see differently.
And that's a process that you learn to grow in. And it's not that's hard to meet challenges because once we get married, then, you know, your two lives and two journeys that are going with, I mean, your life with Father and my life with Father, but then our life together. Your gifts and my gifts and how they work together, and we intertwine in, you know, through jobs and, you know, through relationships, through our each individual friendships and through our interests. And so it's amazing how all marriages, you know, can work through all that. But then when you get married, you know, I mean, things are going to happen. We're very fortunate we haven't had to deal with big issues with, you know, our kids. We've got wonderful kids, but I know that's not the same for many of our dear friends. I mean, they've gone through hard times with their kids. Some we've known people who have lost kids, and I can't even imagine that. And, you know, and sometimes marriages don't survive things like that. And how you work through all those issues. And so, I mean, life just throws things at you, and it's working through all that.
It does. And I think there were some major things that we dealt with, like caring for your parents in our home as they were dying, and really not on the same page about the best way to care for them. And yet we continued to find our way. We've always said, find our way to us, that somehow it's not everything I want, nor is it everything you want, but where can we find this space that, given our differences, here's where we can live together. And I to me, that's the valuable thing. We talk off on the podcast about collaboration and a variety of things. But I think the value in a collaboration in a marriage or in any relationship is, no, we don't have to see it the same way. But if someone stands outside and just says, no, my way is right and you are wrong, I don't see how you ever get to anything valuable there.
You can't, and especially if they don't listen. I mean, there's two sides, and I hate that word side, but there's two lives.
There's two voices in the conversation, yeah.
And coming to learn to listen to each other, and some topics can be more heated than others. And working through those, and I can understand and see where there's a lot of differences and how we can have relationships, respect each other, even if we're not wanting to do the same thing necessarily. Because I don't know if it's healthy. And some, like I say, I don't want it to be generic for everybody. I think it's healthy for each of a spouse to have separate things that they like to do, separate, you know, maybe hobbies. I don't know, to have
a sense of their individuality.
Yeah, to, you know, I mean, you go golfing. I tried it. Louise and I tried it.
That was a mistake.
Yes, that was a mistake. I mean, for me, it's, I don't enjoy it. It would be 4 years of, 4 hours of hitting a ball around the golf course. There's other things I would rather do.
Like garden? Really?
Yes. Absolutely.
See, I grew up on a farm, man. If I'm out in the hot sun working in your garden, I'm usually not a happy camper.
Well, I know. But it took many years for you to realize that.
And to be free to let you be in the garden and not feel like, ooh, I should go out there and help her because it's outside. And in my life growing up, outside was man's work and inside was woman's work.
I don't like that perspective.
Which was a horrible upbringing, but we had that.
In our life, it's probably me. I'm the outside person. Well, you're not the inside, but anyhow.
Yeah, watch it now. Watch it.
But it's healthy to have different interests. And that's just small little things, and have some time separate to where you are doing something that you enjoy. And if you have things that you enjoy together, and that's a lot of things, that's great too. Like, there's no really right or wrong in that. Because each marriage is unique. Each person in each marriage is unique. But it does take work to work through conflicts. It's always easy when you want to do something together. I mean, that's easy, you know, to be able to do that. It's when the conflicts arise, when life and, you know, if you're out of a job or if you're with the church, even where you want to go and if you're wanting to attend or how you want to attend, if you want to do more, you know.
And I think we hear that a lot from people who write here. You know, I really see through this religious thing. It kills me to sit through a Sunday morning service. My wife still, or my husband still, really loves going, loves the... It's more women that probably love that environment than guys, but I've got letters from both. And it's so what are we going to do? It's like we got to make this decision. We're going to go or not go together instead of... No, there's space to say, gosh, if that's meaningful to you, great. And if I'm the husband of that, I'm going to once in a while go too. I want to be with my wife in space she enjoys. At the same time, if it's killing me, she doesn't need to have the expectation, well, you need to always come with me or you're a lousy unbeliever. And I think that's what happens when the words he used here was respect, grace, and fairness. And when that shifts to, no, I want you to do what I want, and I'm willing to pull out any stop to make you do that. I'm willing to get angry and pout or manipulate or fuss or whatever, then that becomes very dangerous to the relationship. Then the relationship's going to get compromised quickly.
Well, women can be also that way, too. I mean,
I was mostly thinking of women. I'm kidding. Lots of email now.
Well, I was just thinking of, in men, because of the submission and the whole thing that can be, you know, the head of the household and all that. I mean, women also, I know women who can also be the same way. So, I mean, there's, you know, both sides can be able to do that. Control and even anger and all those things are,
the silent treatment. I mean, there's lots of ways to manipulate a partner to get
absolutely.
Them to do what you want. And what I love about this is respect, grace, and fairness is the way to deal with differences, not anger, manipulation, control. And I think even when we look at submission, that's one of those words that we mostly, when we hear it, we only see it in terms of power. I mean, somebody's in charge and someone else follows. Instead of submission, when you take it out of the whole power realm of, we've talked about right-handed, left-handed power. Right-handed power is I have the right to force my way, and left-handed power is the freedom to love and let God speak to things and be honest about my needs, but find a way in a loving, respectful way to see what God would give us together. That, to me, is what we've been learning in this journey. And I think it's made our marriage now, because I would say is a lot. I don't know that we have a lot of disagreements on things. We have a lot of differences about what we enjoy about life. But we don't have a lot of differences on issues and whether we should be doing this or should be doing that. I mean, spiritually, we're pretty much on the same page. And, you know, how we spend money, we're pretty much on the same page. And wouldn't you say that those things, we have really found our way? Yeah, sound hesitant.
No, yeah.
Okay.
I was just thinking of other, you know, other marriages and stuff. I just wonder, I'm not still, when I hear the word submission, and I know it's in the Bible, it just is hard for me to hear that, because I feel that it's just very suppressive, and it's
because we interpret it as power.
Yeah.
I think that what I've said almost every wedding service I've ever done, I don't do many anymore, thank God, but I used to do a lot of them, and I always say, hey, you know, to the husband or to the wife, before this person is ever your wife or husband, they're first of all God's son or God's daughter, and you need to treat him that way. And I think that mutual submission that's in the body of Christ really gets to, I think if you define submission as respect and grace and fairness, you would probably get to a sense of, oh, this is where life in a marriage really works and comes together. We respect each other. We love each other. No one's trying to force their will on the other. We're trying to find a way to do what's right. And that takes all the power out of it. And I can't help but imagine that that's what Paul's really talking about. He's not talking about the hierarchy of marriage. You're the man, so you get to make the decision. Well, unfortunately, you're the wife, so you have to go along. But both of us, the husband loving the wife like Christ loved the church, which is pretty huge loving. That means laying your life down. Doesn't mean getting your way. And then the woman being able with respect and love to go along with what we're doing together and find a togetherness. But that doesn't mean a woman who enjoys going to a Sunday morning gathering somewhere, just, well, I won't go because my husband doesn't want to. I don't think that's really true submission. I think if that in a marriage, that should be, hey, if that's meaningful to you, God bless you. And sometimes I'll go with you and try and enjoy it. And I'm the man who just said, I can't go, man. It just kills me. It takes me 5 days to recover from a Sunday morning guilt fest. And I've said, hey, have the freedom not to. And she's giving you the freedom not to. I think it's that pressure that, well, we should be doing everything together. So one of us has to be right and one of us has to be wrong. It makes a huge mistake.
Yeah. And then, I mean, a lot of people can have differences over raising kids. I mean, there's a lot of issues that can, you know, or even how you raise kids and how you, you know, discipline them. There's a lot of things working through. And so, but then a lot of this can carry over into that we're talking about not just in marriage, into relationships with friends.
Yeah.
And other people, you know, and in if you're fellowshipping with people, I mean, it's just treating other people the same way. I mean, it's kind of like how we treat everybody that we relate to.
He said this at the end of, in this interview, this mediator, marriage counselor that was talking. He said he could usually tell within 10 minutes whether or not there's hope for a couple to be healed or whether their marriage will ultimately fail.
I would believe that.
And he said, here was the one tell-all sign that it will eventually fail is when either one demonstrates contempt for the other. If he picks that up in the first 10 minutes, he's going, you know what, I can save you time and money. We're not going to get anywhere. Because once contempt has replaced love and affection, it's over.
What would that look like, you think? Contempt?
Oh, gosh. I think there was one couple we hung out with for a while. Just a part of a day, and you said at the end of the day, that woman doesn't respect him.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And it was that sense of, and you could see it, real contempt in the way she talked, treated, acted around him. And I to me, that's what it looks like. It's just, you know, we're not talking, and I'm just frustrated at you, and now it's not, I'm frustrated that we're having a disagreement. But you are such a horrible creature. The contempt is that downhill looking at somebody.
Directly looking at somebody else and not looking at themselves.
Yeah. Because
the problem.
And I think what he says, how does respect, grace, and fairness find its way into that? And I wouldn't say it never could. But it really takes the person who's got contempt in their heart to own it, to be honest about it, to get help with it. And to find a way to say, or even the one that's the victim of the contempt, at some point you got to say, you know what, I just don't feel like you like me very much. I get the feeling that, and we should get some help, because I don't think husbands or wives are the best change agent for the other person.
Absolutely not.
I really think we're supposed to be cheerleaders. I'm supposed to cheer you on your journey, even where it differs from mine. And you get to cheer me on mine, even where it differs from yours. And I think the more we cheer each other and realize that it's not our job to find unity. It's our task to follow Jesus as best we see him. And Jesus is the one that breathes unity into marriage. We have it where we have it. Where we don't have it, we don't have to pretend it. But if we're learning how to walk in respect, grace, and fairness with each other under the life of God, treating each other as sons and daughters of an incredibly gracious Father, then there's hope of getting, I mean, you can disagree about anything and find your way to a healthy place.
Yeah, and we can change anybody, and that's, you know, you go and you think, and sometimes you hear people, you know, about different things when they knew about their husbands or spouses, and, you know, when they got married, and, you know, they were hoping that they might change, and you know, those things just don't happen. You can't change anybody. Can't change a friend, can't change, you know.
Ultimately, can't change ourselves either.
No.
We've got to come to Jesus and
Father's one who changes our heart. But then it's realizing, and some of this, you really, when you have a problem, the biggest first step that is hurdle you have to go through is once you realize you have a problem, man, that's the biggest thing, because a lot of times people don't know that they have this problem, and they're very against even or close to hearing, and talking and talking is not going to help that. But and even with a spouse, and I think we are so close and connected, if there's issues, spouse, better to give them space and provide support to let them work it out with, you know, others, somebody, you know, professional, non-professional, friend, then, or just Father helping them, instead of just, you know, you trying to change each other. But the main thing is, you know, focusing on myself. And just taking it to Father. I'm not perfect. Spouse, friends aren't perfect. none of us are perfect. And if there's issues, where am I involved in this and how do I respond?
Yeah, and that's partly, I mean, I understand people's frustration of saying, gosh, my partner creates a very difficult environment for me to live in. And if I can't be the change agent, if I can't, what are my hope? And your hope is, number one, find your contentment in Christ alone, not in how your spouse acts or behaves. And then find an honest place to seek for help. And not you the one to change it, but you're the one that might say, you know what, can we go talk to some people and maybe help us find a way through here. But I think what I would say after 36 years in this marriage, a healthy, whole relationship filled with respect, grace, and fairness is worth fighting for. Because I sat down with a man this week who lost his wife recently to cancer. And he was asking about some things in our life. And one of the things we talked about, and he's done a lot of counseling and work with other people as well. And we both just looked at each other and said, you know, when a relationship is good, it is very, very good. And relationship when it's bad, it's very, very, very painful. And it's worth it. It's worth it for your spouse and you to say, you know what, if we're not connecting well, and if we don't have a place for respect, grace, and fairness to be in our relationship, let's find one.
Yeah.
That's important enough to have. Well, thanks, babe. I know we're running out of time a bit, and I know you enjoy being in front of this microphone as much as I enjoy digging weeds out of your garden.
It's not as bad as being in front of a group of people.
Oh, okay. It's easier because it's me. And it was the puppies, but we had to throw them out because the pups started fighting and barking and screaming and yelling. So
yeah, they got a little noisy.
They got kicked out of the podcast even before we started, so this was actually take two. Anyway, keep Shelley and Heather in your prayers. Surgery on Tuesday, as I understand it. We'll give the links. You can stay up to date on that on their website. And pray for our brothers and sisters in Kenya and Somalia and Sudan, where the need for finance and resource, and the world's aware of it, which is great, and not just, you know, individuals, but other countries are trying to respond. But it is a huge need.
I know the news networks have been broadcasting them quite a bit, and so if there probably are a lot of links on their websites too, as far as places to help too.
So I'm leaving for Australia Tuesday. Are you going with me?
No. I'm trying to play catch up.
And what's wonderful is we're both really one about that. I really feel like this isn't your trip to go on, and you do too, and that'll always disappoint the people in Australia. Why didn't you bring Sarah?
I've been there before.
Sarah goes when... You haven't been to these places, because I haven't been to these places yet.
Well, I've been to Australia and New Zealand. And
there's some wonderful people we know there, but unfortunately, some of those we're not going to connect with on this trip. But anyway... Hopefully Brad and I will be back next week. If not, be patient. Somewhere in September, we'll find our way back. Thank you for joining us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to participate in the conversation, you may do so at our website, thegodjourney.com.